Are you truly stepping into the role of leader in your own life the way you know you're meant to? What shifts would unlock your full potential? It's time to explore those answers with the host of Sacred Leadership, intuitive business coach, Charisse Alexander.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Sacred Leadership with Charisse here on the Inspired Choices Network. I am, of course, Charisse Alexander, your host, and today I am joined by Holly, where we are talking about the near-death shift, what dying taught me about my life, business, and purpose. In today's episode, I'm sitting down with Holly Porter, who is sharing her story of a near-death experience that reset everything she thought she knew about success, faith, and why we're really here. Holly opens up about the moment life almost ended and how coming back invited her into a deeper level of surrender, clarity, and courage. Together, we explore the lessons that only the edge of life can teach, letting go of what doesn't matter, leading from presence instead of pressure, and building a business that aligns with your soul instead of your ego. Today's conversation is raw, grounding, and full of perspective shifts that stay with you long after you listen. If you've ever felt called more to or wondered what truly matters when everything is stripped away, today's episode is for you. So Holly, thank you so much for joining me. And I know I haven't even begun to scratch the surface of your story. Please welcome, and I'd like to turn it over to you so you can tell us a little bit more about your journey, and we'll dive right in.
Yeah, well, thank you, Charisse, for having me on the show. And I'm an open book, so you can interrupt me, ask me any questions, whatever works, whatever you think will help the listeners, because I have lots of stories. So I don't know, where would you like me to begin?
Well, I mean, I guess what I would be, when I say, tell me all about yourself, I guess today's episode, we're talking about near-death experiences and how that created such a massive shift. So I guess the lead up to that point, and then what really changed for you after.
Oh, besides everything.
Everything, yeah.
Well, okay, leading up to that point, I was a really healthy person. And in the fall of 2021, I got COVID. And unlike most, I had a little bit different of experience than most, but we all suffered. So one way or another, we probably lost somebody, or, you know, we're sick ourselves, whatever. So we all kind of went through that. I had it at home for about a week before I intuitively really knew I was in trouble. I mean, I knew I was sick, but like I had no idea until I got woken up, and I just knew. And so my husband, somehow I brought it home to him. So he was sick as well. And I said, I got to get to the hospital now. And I am not a hospital person. In fact, I had no records at the hospital whatsoever. And within the first 30 days, my app said I had 422. So it was wild. So I got in there. He dropped me off the front of the hospital. By the time he parked, we know how slow the ER is. They already had me on the way to the ICU. So they knew I was in big trouble. And my oxygen was 6,300s, you know, perfect. And that started my first day of 70 in the hospital, and two different hospitals, by the way. And then I was intubated twice. I had a trachea. I was in a coma probably off and on about 30 days. I was on a ventilator for about 52, on a feeding tube for 63. So not a fun journey. I was actually grateful when I was in a coma, because when you can't breathe, it's not a good feeling. And I never had suffered from anxiety or PTSD. And you get all of that when you're in the ICU for any period of time. And just that fear of not being able to catch your breath. So the first 3.5 weeks is when I had all of my experiences that I remember. And there's three things, and I didn't know any of this for a couple of years after my experience, I learned. So there's out-of-body experiences, which are that. Then there's spiritual transformative experiences, and then there's near-death experiences. So I had a whole bunch of out-of-body. I had one spiritual that I thought was another NDE, which other people argue that it is still. And then I had this near-death experience. And so all those things, and I can specifically, like, I know when my near-death one was, because of it was in between the two intubations and when I woke up. And I know at the end was my spiritual experience, because that was the experience when I knew I would live. And so, Yeah, you tell me where you want to go from there, and we'll go there.
Well, I'm totally fascinated about the NDE, I won't lie.
That's okay.
So
I know.
let's, if you don't mind. So at what point, it's a 70-day experience. You've talked about out of body, you've talked about spiritual, you've talked about near-death experience. So I guess at what point did you realize that you were actually having an NDE if you knew that you were actually having one? Or did you only know once
Yeah.
you were like fully conscious and back here?
That's a really good question. With COVID, it's a brain disease. So there's so much going on up in there. There's so much COVID fog. And then I got long COVID after and had a long journey with that. So there was a lot of that stuff happening. I don't know if I really understood everything until, like, I knew when I woke up from the near-death experience, I knew that had happened. Like, I didn't have all the details. Later, I was told more would be revealed to me when the time is right. And I love that because usually I'm not a patient person. I want to know everything right now. But with this, there was so much that if I would have known and understood everything at that point, it would have been so overwhelming. And so, like, I mean, God's my higher power, whatever I respect for anyone else. But for me, it was like, oh, wow, he knew me. He knew that I can handle a lot. But it was like, oh, you need this lesson, and I'm gonna give this information to you. So my near-death experience, when I was in the hospital, on most all of my experiences, I was smart enough to understand I was not doing well. And when I was leaving for these journeys, I would take my bed with me. Like, I think I knew, wait, my body's over there in my bed, and if it doesn't come with me on this journey, I may not get it back. Like, there was enough going on in there that I was probably fearful of that, maybe. So I did experience a lot of these journeys. I would leave in my bed, and then I would get out of my bed for the experiences. So the near death was the same. I was leaving my hospital room, and I'm going down the hallway in my bed, and they have you sign all these papers when they intubate you, and I don't know if I signed an NDR. I keep forgetting to actually go back and look, but near death, no, NDR.
Do not a DNR.
DNR, DNR. Do not resuscitate. So as I'm going down the hallway, I'm shaking my finger at the nurse's station saying, I rescind my DNR, I rescind my DNR. And so I obviously knew something was happening. And as I'm going down the corridors of the hospital, I could see other hallways, other beds being pushed down with me. And I think those are other people dying in the hospital, which is eerie, because half of them were dying at that time. There were two full floors in the hospital I was in. It was the Delta version, which was, I think, still far the worst. And as I get to this, like, what I call the Stadium of Light, it's like the biggest football field outdoor stadium thing you'd ever see, but all the beds were being wheeled into skyboxes, like, I guess what you call them. And then there was this like pause there, which I didn't understand in the story. And so I found out this later. We can revisit that later. But all of a sudden, I'm out of my bed, and now I'm in the Stadium of Light. And there are thousands, hundreds of thousands of people in this place. And I remember looking around, and no, I could see feet. So nobody was on the ground. And I remember seeing feet. I remember seeing the people in bright, bright clothing or light or white, clothing. But what was interesting, there was like this fog of light. It was like so bright of a light that you think it would blind you, but it was like my senses were, oh, on fire. Because in the hospital, I tell the story about losing all five senses at one time. Taste and smell from COVID, touch because they put your hand, tie your hands to a bed when you're on a ventilator. Hearing, the ventilator took like 90% of my hearing, so everybody
You
sounded
bet.
like the Charlie Brown school teacher. And then my eyesight's already, I'm past legally blind. So without correction, I couldn't tell who anyone was unless they were like about 8 inches in front of my face. And then they had usually glasses on, the cap, the mask, the everything's yellow, So, that was a weird feeling. I was like, put me in a coma because you couldn't communicate. It was just like really hard. So when I get into the Stadium of Light and I all my senses are like heightened. And I mean, it was just like amazing, but it was so bright that it was weird that I could see anything, but it was like I could see better than I've ever seen in my whole life. And then I'm having communication with people in there, which is telepathy, or not, nobody's mouths are moving, nobody. And it was like the speed of light. It just like you had a thought, you already had your answer before you even finished the thought. I mean, it was just like back and forth, back and forth. Anything that it's like I had the gift of knowing in my life. And people that have that, people usually say to you, how do you know that? And if you have that gift, you just know. Like it's just that you're not psychic, you know things. And it was like now the gift of all knowing. And so the next thing, there's sound, all four sounds around me start with this music, this angelic music. And I remember coming back to my sisters telling them, this is the best concert I've ever been to, because I wasn't sure, of everything that was going on. I'm like, no, it was the best event. And, they were like, sound like angels. And, later I'm listening to the things I remember telling them and I'm thinking, why didn't they figure it out? It was the weirdest thing that they didn't figure it out. But I didn't know the words. I'd never heard the songs. I didn't know the words. No, but no. How do I say that? I hadn't ever heard the music, but I knew the words to every song. And I think that was part of the knowing all, like so fast. And so I was able to join in, and it just was so angelic. And then the next thing I would call my life review I'm in, and I'm experiencing it like if you were in a play and I'm watching it play out, and I'm not seeing any bad. And trust me, there's plenty of it. And I'm thinking, all right, I'm going to just enjoy all the good.
You're like, this is a good show, but this
Yeah,
doesn't
it's a
seem
great
right.
show. And so I never asked any of those questions or anything, but when that kind of ended, I didn't get a choice to come back. Like a lot of people, they got to
Talk about having a
choose. And
choice.
people that got to choose that didn't come back, we don't ever talk to, right? We don't know what that went, how that went down. But I didn't get a choice. I got sent back. But before that happened, I was told to do two things. I was told to go start this nonprofit, and it was called Adventure Bucket Wish, but I wasn't given a mission or any details. And then the second thing, I was told I had just pitched the day I had found out I had COVID, sicker than a dog. I pitched to like nine people online for this new company called Retreat R&R, and it was a software company, and it was to get investors. And this company I was pitching to partner with, they had a billionaire backer. So I'm like, slam dunk, I don't have to do all the fundraising, and I've done lots of fundraising. So I was excited about that. But I was told not to partner with them, that that wasn't the highest and best thing, and that it needed to be mine. And of course, I was bummed about that later. But then later again, later, I found out why. And that's the coolest part, is to be able to find out the whys. So next thing I know, I'm back in my body. And I mean, I was doing better but I was like, I just remember being so disoriented. And of course, you feel all the pain now. And I did feel better. But I remember my sister came over and was talking to me, and she could tell the anxiety was really high. She went and got the little paper that I have to point at the letters to spell anything because you can't talk. Took long time to do that usually. And I pointed out KID, and she's trying to help me along. By the way, my husband was home with COVID for 3.5 weeks of all these experiences and couldn't come see me even. So it was really heartbreaking. The day I got the trachea, it was the first day he got to see me. So this was like early on, and my sisters just rotated. I could have one person every 24 hours, so they were there with me. And this sister, Jill, she happened to be there that day, and she's like, "Do you need me to tell your kids something?" No. And so I keep spelling NAP, and she said, "When you spell kidnap," she said, "I wanted to go grab the garbage can and throw up in it because I was like." What happened? They told me you were doing better. So I ran an errand and I came back and you're telling me kidnap. Like, what is happening? So then the doctor and nurse walk in to extubate me because I was doing better. So they took that out and I could see spirits in my room. I wasn't afraid of them though, but there were at least three in there. And quickly I realized I was the only one that could see them because the doctor and nurse leave And my sister's like trying to tell me no one's in there, and that she's opening the closet door and the drawers and the bathroom door, just trying to show me. And so I was like, okay,
So
whatever.
is this new for you at this point? Like this was not something that you could see before. No. So this is
No,
new.
I mean, I've had some experiences, but not like that. And it was there. I mean, to say I was kidnapped, there had to have been some fear around that. But like, why, when I was in such a glorious place? So I didn't know for 2 years. I didn't know. And then in between that 2 years, well, first I listened to what I was t my assignment, my mission for the nonprofit. I decided I wanted it to be for long COVID. There was over 100 million people suffering. It was new. It was underserved. Nobody knew anything about it. I mean, my doctors were clueless. I was giving them more information than they knew, right? I should have told them. So I mean, I was so sick for so long, like 1.5 years. I was pretty sick. I was on
Jeez.
oxygen for a long time, but I listened. I went and incorporated, got the 501c3 for the nonprofit, decided that's my mission. Didn't partner with the retreat R&R, and I incorporated that and started working on all of those details. And then about 3 to 4 months later, I call what I went through was my 2 years. It was almost 2 years of hell. It was like, take every bad day that you've ever had in your life, times it by 100, and that might have been how crappy I felt every day. And
Jeez.
I was just like devastated. There was so many things, like my kids and siblings. I mean, we have eight adult children. I am from a family of nine. So you would think they almost lost you. They're going to gravitate towards you to hang on to you a little tighter. And it was like I repelled them. And I had a couple siblings, and I had, a couple of really good friends. My husband was great. Other than that, I felt like every relationship was being jeopardized, and not knowing why. I mean, I prayed every day I would have died. I just thought, God, why did you save me to put me through this? Like, I don't understand what is happening. What I should have been asking now, looking back, was, what lessons do I need to learn out of this and move on? Because this sucks. And so,
Absolutely.
I mean, it was every heartstring you could ever think of having in pain. I felt it to my core. And so coming out of that, 2 years later, I ended up finding the IAMS conference, which is International Association for Near-Death Studies. I went to it, found out about the out-of-body experiences, found out what the spiritual transformative experiences are, and then the near-death. And they are all different. Didn't know any of that. So I started questioning a lot of things. And I had remembered pretty much everything in the out-of-body, definitely everything in the spiritual one, but the near-death, when I had that long pause in between getting into the stadium, there were just some gaps to the story. And I was starting my book, and I was like, hey, out of integrity, I really feel like that I need to have those answers. So I'm certified in hypnosis. I know how it works. Called my mentor, coach, friend, and said, hey, would you do a hypnosis session on just my near-death experience? Because I feel like there's more to it that I'm not remembering. And let's see what I can remember. You can come out of a hypnosis session at any time. You can open your eyes. I didn't want that because I asked for that experience. But if there's fear, if there's anxiety, if there people get scared to do those things, you know what's going on the whole time. So we ended up doing this about hour and 40 minute hypnosis session. And boy, it didn't take me. I learned so much out of it. It was almost like having another near-death experience, but yet I hate to compare it. But it really filled in a lot of the gaps and the answers for me. I ended up, so here's the rest of that story. So I ended up going to this place called what I call the in-between. So it's not light and it's not dark. The dark's on the right-hand side and the light's on the left-hand side. And there's all of this matter. Remember all the light that I saw in the stadium and how it was weird I could see through it because it was like foggy, but you could see so clear. Well, now all that matter is like other colors, like dark, shady, shadowy, cobalt blue and gray and silver and black. And they're swirling around. And as they swirled around, they would gather the matter, would like gather, and it would make a heart and it would float to the left. And I remember thinking, gosh, even in the dark, it's attracted to the light, right? I remember thinking that. Well, there ended up being this entity there. And I only that, I don't remember anything else. His name, we were able to talk to him. His name was Darby. And Darby told me that he brought me there because he wanted my light. He couldn't have the light. He couldn't go to the light. And he wanted mine. And my hypnosis friend really had my back. It felt good because he really, they bantered. He was like, that's not yours. You're stealing it. And she earned that and you need to let her have it. And so they went back and forth. And next thing I know, I feel on my side of my face, I feel that light that I saw, but I felt the heat too. It was just like, it's coming. And Darby said, the light's coming to take her and I'm not going to be able to stop it. And so he's like, well, then let her go. And so finally, Darby lets me go. And Darby didn't have any relationship to me. He just wanted my light. That's all I gathered out of that. I walk forward and over way far on the right-hand side, I see this mountain with one eye on it. And I saw it twice. And I remember thinking the second time, you're supposed to see that. Don't know what that means, but noted. Okay, I see you looking at me, you know. I still am figuring out a little bit more about that, but it didn't feel evil at all. It was a protector of some sort.
Oh, so are you talking about like even the eye behind you? And before you answer that question, we need to go to break right now. So when you come back, I want to know if it's the same, like the evil eye that you're talking about or the protective eye. We will be right back.
Leadership isn't reserved for CEOs or world leaders. It's something each of us is called to embody in our own lives. But how do you awaken that inner leader with clarity and confidence? On Sacred Leadership with intuitive business coach Charisse Alexander, you'll discover powerful tools and spiritual insights to align your words, actions, and outcomes. Tune in every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 Central, 9 Mountain, and 8 Pacific, right here on InspiredChoicesNetwork.com.
Are you a subject matter expert? Are you here to share your expertise with an audience waiting to hear from you in only the way you can deliver? Are you ready to have your voice amplified across the airwaves? Inspired Choices Network has a global radio platform streaming to millions of people across the world. Professionally produced and supported by an accomplished team every step of the way, you can broadcast from anywhere in the world, knowing your voice matters, and we ensure it is delivered with ease and efficiency. Eager to hear your message, the world awaits. Contact us today to become an Inspired Choices Network radio host. Email becomeahost@inspiredchoicesnetwork.com.
This is Sacred Leadership with Charisse Alexander. To participate in the program, join the live studio audience in our chat room at inspiredchoicesnetwork.com. You can also send an email to Charisse@pavitraleadership.com. Now back to the program.
Welcome back to Sacred Leadership with Charisse on the Inspired Choices Network, where today I am joined by Holly Porter, and we are talking about near-death shift and what dying has taught Holly about life, business, and purpose. Now, we have 7 minutes until our next break, but before we continue on, if you're looking for more information about what Holly does and her experience and the coaching and all that she has to bring to this journey, please go to her website at hollyporterinternational.com. Now, there was a question that I had for you, Holly, and that was around, there was something that you had said. You said that one of the messages you received is that more would be revealed later because the experience was so overwhelming. And really what I want to kind of dive into here is, you know, if anyone in the audience is familiar with near-death experiences, those that come back often talk about there's massive shifts in their life and how they might have looked at something. And I would imagine that there would be massive shifts, but what I'm really interested in is like what, aside from your near-death experience, what parts of yourself also died? What was the before? Like, and really what I'm looking for is like, yes, you were healthy, but what else? What about your mindset? Like what shifted when you came back that you were just like, oh, I totally see this different?
Yeah, I think I saw more of the good. I mean, I was always a positive person and I had done years of personal development, which saved my life too. I think that's one of the reasons I lived. But I think just the shift for me was just seeing things out of a different light. I guess that's just the easiest way to say it. It's like I'm not as worried about what other people think about me anymore. I'm like, I mean, dying's not the worst thing, trust me. I mean, but you don't have to die to really live, and you don't have to die to have your own shift. And so I think it's just looking at things so much differently and being patient with yourself. You know, I think God put me in a coma to sit me still so that I would listen, because I wasn't listening. I think I get relapses on my long COVID for weeks at a time. I realized this last time, it was my third one, and I'm like, huh, maybe I'm getting told something and I'm not listening again. And so I'm getting these symptoms back. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not planning on getting those this year. I'm gonna handle them way differently. It's just, I think having that patience with yourself, first of all. I believe Rotary International, it's been around since 1911, and their motto is service above self. And when I was writing my book, I realized that is so flawed. I don't believe that whatsoever, because it's like putting the oxygen mask on you first before you can help somebody else. And service above self, you can't pour from an empty cup. Those doctors and nurses couldn't have served me and given me the healthcare I needed if they weren't sleeping at night or if they weren't eating right. And so I feel like that was a big lesson I learned. I thought, I'm going to write them. I haven't yet, but I'm going to. Whether they change it or not, I don't know.
Do you feel like then that before the experience, you were pouring from an empty cup and you were go, go, go? Because it sounds like part of the lesson or part of the experience, part of the awakening was to slow down, and that you get reminded every now and again to take your time and have patience with yourself and so on and so forth. And to make sure that you're filling your own cup before and pour from the overflow. So do you feel like really what the experience was meant to awaken you to is to exactly do that, just slow down and take your time and not focus on necessarily serving others, but to serve yourself first so that you could in turn serve others?
Yeah, I want to say it's almost like slow down to speed up. And I know those are opposites, but when you do things differently, you get a different outcome. So if you keep making the same mistakes, for me, three's the big number for me. I seem to keep doing things over about three times before I finally, maybe I should change the way I'm doing something. I'm a little slower than the rest, but I think it's that. It's just being present more. That's a big lesson that I needed to. And then really listening, not always be, we're such a culture of wanting to get in the last word or wanting to, we're thinking, what can I say as someone's talking to us, saying, what am I going to be saying next? Instead of really being present to that person and really listening to what they have to say and responding to that instead of responding to whatever is going on in your head. And I'm very ADHD, so that's always a challenge, but that's been a big lesson too.
So when you, do you feel at any time, because you know, sometimes when we talk about the death of an old self, and there might be grieving that goes on with that, right? You might not even know that you're grieving a version of yourself, but did you experience any of that at all where it was like, oh geez, I really consciously or even subconsciously, even now when you reflect on it, is there any part of you that feels like, oh, you know, I grieved this part of me that I didn't even realize I had died away?
Yeah. And it wasn't just grieving me. I'd lost my mom like a year and a half before this. I'd lost a grandbaby 5 months before, you know, I'd lost a brother in a really horrific car wreck and then his wife. And it was like, I hadn't really grieved. I was really good with death. I was in charge of funerals. I would sing at almost all the family funerals. And it was like grieving that all came because those 2 years of really hard stuff we went through. A couple of them involved a couple grandsons also that we lost through DCFS and through a family member being able to adopt them. And I'd had custody of them a couple times. I mean, there was a lot of ick around that. Yeah. And I know those were lessons I needed for the philanthropy work in the future. However, at the time, you're just trying to push through and get through this. Yeah. And I will say the grief, not just of myself and grieving being in heaven, coming back here, and then finally grieving the losses of everyone that had passed away, and then grieving a couple grandkids. The worst grief I can say that I have experienced for me was grieving people that are still living. That is so much harder than
anything. I agree.
You know they're here. There's no closure. You know they're here, but you're not able to hug them every day, and you're not able to talk to them all the time. And so there was so much grief involved in all that as well. Yeah.
And so from what it sounds like, it sounds like it took you really quite a few years to really begin to process those losses, right? Before you got COVID, then all the experiences during COVID, and then even after COVID. So that would have been a lot that you would have been letting go of. So I imagine it would be difficult to see specifically what of yourself you would be grieving in there, because there was so much.
There was so much. And they say it takes 10 years, up to 10 years, for people that have near-death experiences to unravel everything. 10 years. It's been 4. So I guess I feel like I've gotten a lot out of it. I feel like I've gotten a lot of answers. I mean, I still get the more will be revealed to you when the time is right. That was a brilliant thing to say to me, because I was like, cool, there's more. Wait, there's more. It's like the rest of the story.
I totally want to pick up on that. We're going to go to our second commercial break, but I don't lose that train of thought, because I'm chuckling, because it's almost like, be patient, there's more. And I am the least patient person I know, but we will be right back.
Leadership isn't reserved for CEOs or world leaders. It's something each of us is called to embody in our own lives. But how do you awaken that inner leader with clarity and confidence? On Sacred Leadership with intuitive business coach Charisse Alexander, you'll discover powerful tools and spiritual insights to align your words, actions, and outcomes. Tune in every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 Central, 9 Mountain, and 8 Pacific, right here on InspiredChoicesNetwork.com.
How wonderful would it be to carry your favorite Inspired Choices Network host with you throughout your day? Well, now you can. Inspired Choices Network now has its very own mobile app. Our free app offers live streaming shows, along with thousands of podcasts and TV episodes. Our shows cover a wide variety of topics. Whether you're waking up with us, carrying us through the day, and taking us to bed with you, we're always here for you to enjoy. We're easy to find. Just search for Inspired Choices Network in the Apple App Store or Google Play Store.
This is Sacred Leadership with Charisse Alexander. To participate in the program, join the live studio audience in our chat room at InspiredChoicesNetwork.com. You can also send an email to Charisse@PavitraLeadership.com. Now back to the program.
Welcome back to Sacred Leadership with Charisse here on the Inspired Choices Network, where today I am joined by Holly Porter. And Holly is just sharing with us her 70-day near-death experience with COVID. And during that experience, she received a divine calling that reshaped her life and mission. She founded the Adventure Bucket Wish Foundation, dedicated to supporting women to be resilient and lead with purpose, passion, and presence. We are going to touch on that, but right before break, I was asking you about one of the messages, which was, don't worry, that more would be revealed. There was that. And then the other part of it was how quickly communication happened. And so do you find that now that you are, like, after you had come back, that you were able to, so of course there was sight that came about, but yeah. What else do you feel like really got sharpened after that experience in the spiritual energetic sense? I'm curious.
Yeah. Okay. Let me go back to the hypnosis session and I'll tell you a couple more things happened there, because that really was significant to me at that point.
Yeah.
Kind of that turning point. So after I saw the one eye, which, like I said, I don't have all the meaning to that. I just know it wasn't evil. And if you look it up, there's a lot of people think it's bad. It's not all bad. And so then I saw a tree, and when I saw the tree, I felt so much relief, because when I was doing the branding for Retreat R&R, I told the marketers that it needed to have a tree in the logo. And when I saw the tree, I mean, here it is 2 years later, mm-hmm. I'm like looking at it going, oh my gosh, I created that. And I didn't even remember this was part of the story. And it was like God showing me, I call those God gifts, because it was like, here's a little nugget for you, because you just had a hard 2 years and now I'm going to gift you with this, you know? So it was like, that was a big shift. And then when I got over to the light again, all that matter now is light. But those hearts become pink and like a pink quartz colored. And I saw those and same thing. I was like, okay, I was told to do Retreat R&R, not partner. I was told to do this nonprofit. Well, when we did my nonprofit first fundraiser gala, in every little gift bag, I knew intuitively that it needed to have a pink rose quartz heart in it. Mm-hmm. Yep. So when I see them later, I'm like, again, it was like, you did exactly what I asked you to. Here's your gift. You know, here's your heartfelt whatever. Well, then I see the life review again. And I remember this time to ask, where's all the bad? I asked. Yeah. And I never did see God, but I heard him. And he said, very clear. He said, I'm showing you the good because that's what matters. And I just thought, wow, what a God of love. Of course, that's what matters. And it just, and then he told me after that, the most healing thing for me that I needed after those 2 years, he said the message was, love them where they're at. And, you know, I saw the love, I felt all the love and joy in the Stadium of Light. But if I would have remembered that, love them where they're at, I guarantee you, I wouldn't have had that 2 years of hell. I would have, I would have responded and judged differently, just been a different person about it. And that was the time I needed it because of the healing. I had to go through those hard times. I had to see all those things for the future things that I'm working on and how I can serve and help in that organization that was such a crappy experience, right?
Yeah.
And so I see that now. And I think that's just the more will be revealed to you when you realize there's, I mean, if you just love people where they are, it does change the energy around all of it.
It sure does. And I was recently, I'm listening to the book right now, The Secret Letters of the Monk Who Sold His Ferrari by Robin Sharma. And one of the lines that he has in there is a little similar to what you're saying, but he's talking about how we treat others is a reflection of how we treat ourselves. And the point that he was trying to make is that, you know, when we're all, people will often ask these questions around, well, you know, this person did this and this person did that and they hurt you and then all this other kind of stuff. And it's like, how do you still show love to them? Or how do you still show up with kindness? And how do you still do these things? And it's, I guess at the end of the day, when I heard that, that really settled with me because I was like, you know, it's so true. Because, you know, when we're feeling at our worst and we show our worst, then that actually is a reflection of how we would treat ourselves when we're at our worst. And we, if you think about it, generally speaking, when you're feeling pretty cruddy about yourself, the first thing that we are often our worst critics, right? The Yes. stories that go on in our head. So anyways, that statement, if you love people where they are, no, that's not mine, that's yours. But anyways, but the point that I'm trying to make is that what a beautiful statement about how we can stay really rooted and centered in love regardless of what's going on. And that what was shown to you was really just all that mattered, just all the lovely, happy moments that you had in your life.
I will say, though, one thing I learned in that experience also that I got out of that was that we will have to experience the pain that we cause somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about that, that's harsh because I didn't want that family member of mine. I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy, let alone my family member, to feel the pain they caused me because it was the worst pain ever imaginable. Yeah. And it's interesting, just a thought to remember, you know, that we're going to have to feel that pain and,
And I had read that somewhere about someone else, or maybe it was an idea that was shared. Exactly what you're saying is that when you are doing your life review, and that thought alone stops me dead in my tracks, especially when you're consciously, and let's just be very real and very human here, when you're consciously choosing that you're going to do something to hurt someone, that's usually, it's like, ooh, I would never want to feel this in my life. So let me not go down that road. Right. And I don't know.
And I feel like for me that seeing the good, I saw it the first time too. And maybe I just don't remember them showing me the bad. But when I asked about it and was told that, I think that was just another healer for my heart at the time. I don't think my heart could have taken seeing the bad and feeling all that pain that because I had already felt like I had endured more than I possibly could the 2 years I went through all that other. So I think it was just another God gift just saying, this is what matters. Like, focus on the good.
Or maybe the only reason the good matters is because the what you call bad is kind of what you had to go through in order to learn the light side of that, right?
Maybe.
Because you cannot have the light without the shadow, and we have to go through the shadow to find the light. So maybe the reason why it doesn't matter is because it's a necessary part of the journey. Otherwise, you need the contrast is the point that I'm getting at. Yeah. So if that makes you feel any better. Tell us a little bit about, before we go to our next commercial break, which is coming up, I would love for you to share with us more about the foundation or the nonprofit that you set up, as well as the SHIFT framework, which stands for Surrender, Hope, Intuition, Faith, and Transformation. So tell us first about the organization that you set up.
Yeah. So remember I said that it was for long COVID. Well, but then you contradicted it when you said something else because it changed. And so that was another shift I had. So for 2 years, I focused on it. We did some fundraisers, but going into the third year, something didn't sit right with me and nobody wanted to hear the word COVID anymore. I mean, it was just getting suppressed. We had a podcast and I took all the fundraisers off the table and thought, well, until I know what, I'm just going to keep doing the podcast, which was only for people with long COVID, caretakers, medical professionals and holistic professionals. That's the only guests I interviewed. Hmm. And one day I'm doing a podcast and I'm interviewing somebody with a long COVID story. And all of a sudden I started reliving mine. I couldn't breathe. I was like, felt like there was an elephant on my chest again. I was just like, what is happening? You know, cause we're on a video podcast and I get this huge download that is so clear. And I was waiting for that answer or a answer, I should say. This is not your mission anymore. And this is your last podcast. And I was like, cool. I mean, I was excited. I had a hard time even finishing the show because I was like, oh, you got told an answer, do it, you know? Yeah. And so then I went through grief on that because I called one of my board members, very holistic. She said, if I remember right, you got told the name, but you didn't get told the mission. We created that mission. I said, yeah. And she said, so we're in our third year of the nonprofit, which is huge. And let's just keep the name and change our mission. Cause I'm like, why would God tell me this to do this if he's going to just take it away? So that's when she said, what will light you up? What will make you excited to do this? And it was all about purpose because that's what I gained out of this. I couldn't have told you before that my 50, whatever years I was, what my real purpose was, what I thought my legacy was going to be. And it's like, to be able to come out with those answers and know you have the end result. Now I got to do everything and the work in between, which hasn't been easy. And I know won't be easy, but I'm not looking for easy. I'm looking for done. I need to do it. And so it was just all that shifting and all those changing. I mean, those are just very, very tip of the iceberg things that shifted for me. Lots of miracles.
Interesting because, you know, you said, and it reminds me of sometimes when I'm doing my own intuitive work. And what was the piece that you said there, or your board member had said, well, he gave you the name, but he didn't tell you what to do. And your logical mind comes in and goes, oh, this is what it must be. Like, and we just fill in all the blanks, right? Yeah. And I was recently doing a social media post about this where I was sharing and I was saying, you know, sometimes maybe we're just supposed to pause. And just wait and see what comes, right? Before we just, and so maybe that was another gift within this, right? Is learning the slow down and let's pause and, you know, let's see what else comes up instead of trying to fill in the blanks with our logical mind, right? So, yeah. But I guess the gift of that is you eventually did actually find your purpose and what you were supposed to do. Is that correct?
Right. And the presence and purpose and finding in that and helping other women with the nonprofit really fits into the retreat stuff completely. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's still in alignment. So now I've got a good fundraising platform to, you know, help raise money for it. So I feel like they're in total alignment. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, we are going to take our final break. And when we come back, we are going to talk about the SHIFT framework in a little bit more detail. We will be right back.
Leadership isn't reserved for CEOs or world leaders. It's something each of us is called to embody in our own lives. But how do you awaken that inner leader with clarity and confidence? On Sacred Leadership with intuitive business coach Charisse Alexander, you'll discover powerful tools and spiritual insights to align your words, actions, and outcomes. Tune in every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 Central, 9 Mountain, and 8 Pacific, right here on InspiredChoicesNetwork.com. This is Sacred Leadership with Charisse Alexander.
To participate in the program, join the live studio audience in our chat room at inspiredchoicesnetwork.com. You can also send an email to Charisse@pavitraleadership.com. Now back to the program.
Welcome back to Sacred Leadership with Charisse on the Inspired Choices Network, where today I am joined by Holly Porter, and she is sharing all the details and her story on her near-death experience and what she came away with, some of the lessons that she's learned, and how it has maybe helped her realign her purpose. So, Holly, I'm going to turn it over to you so you can tell us a little bit about Shift Framework.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting how that all came about. And it's funny how when you buy a new car and then you see it everywhere, it's kind of that same thing with the word shift. So yeah. I had another name for 2 years for the book. And when I decided 11/11 of this last year was the day it was going to come out, which is also significant. It was in my near-death story, by the way. The tree had, the logo has 11 leaves and 11 roots. And I got out of the hospital on 11/11. And my birthday's 1/1. So anyway, lots of significance there. But now I just lost my train of thought. See, I got all off track. So the shift framework. Okay, shift. So I had named it Near Death Shift. It felt so good. It was like I was totally, yeah, that's the name. But I wasn't going to use the acronym at all. Like it all evolved while I was finishing up the book and while my editor was way into near-death experience. She's probably read every book out there on it. And so she was the perfect one to help me edit it. And so that just came. And I said, somehow it's got to have personal development in it because that's what I'm about. It was my 17th book. So we had 17 chapters. And I wanted it to be my story, but I didn't want it to really be a memoir. I wanted it to be more powerful. And I knew it was spiritual. And I didn't have a spiritual book. So I was like, okay, spiritual personal development, that's what I want. So we separated it into two parts. First part's the story and everything. And the second part is all the lessons that I learned around the SHIFT acronym. And the eight chapters are eight things that I created, like kind of like a life wheel, so to speak. Yep. I had created that 5 years before and had never finished the program. And one day I'm like finishing writing stuff and I'm like, so the last part of the book is those eight things in a chapter, and then shift is around each of them. And it talks about people in history, things I learned, things to compare it to, some more stories. And it really, those words to me, surrender, hope, intuition, faith, and transformation. I mean, everybody needs those of some sort, and some kind of go together and some help the other. And I mean, and it's interesting that surrender to me and transformation are the bookends of that word. And it just fits because you need all the others to have the transformation. And so.
And that word surrender is so widely misunderstood. It's frequently used, but I think it is equally easily and frequently misunderstood. Where do you think most leaders really, I don't want to say get it wrong, but are misaligned with what surrender actually means?
Okay, for me, I'll say, for me, surrender, I feel like everybody takes it as that I quit, you know? And I don't look at it that way. I look at it, I give it to God. I surrender. I've done everything I can to make something happen, and I need help. Because nobody does it alone. And surrendering is just saying you need help, not you quit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hopefully.
And specific, I mean, I get, and you're right. I agree that that's what it means to me as well, which is you're saying, there was another coach or podcaster where she would say, she'd get really stuck in her head and she would be like, I got to figure this out. Mm. And so the surrender piece is, I don't actually have to figure out anything by myself. I can actually invite in the help with it, right? And I think that's also part of what you're saying, right? Because part of giving it to, because I think some people think that it becomes very passive, but it doesn't have to be. If you're sitting with something and you can't wrap your head around it and you can't see your way through to the other side, sometimes the surrender is saying, I need help. Can you send me someone or a solution or the intelligence around how we are going to navigate this together? Sometimes that's equally surrender, right? But it's certainly not necessarily a passive non-action. Not for me, it isn't.
I agree. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So can you share a moment where you felt like your intuition, this probably happens all the time, where your intuition directly contradicts your logic. So, and was that after your experience or did that happen before your experience? Because I almost feel like after your experience, you wouldn't have even questioned it.
Well, the first thing that just comes to my mind is the podcast. You know, I have this mission that I've created. I've worked 2.5 years now on it. I mean, talk about blood, sweat, and tears. It wasn't fun.
Yeah.
Right? So logically, it wasn't fun for me. And my motto is, if it's not fun, I'm not doing it. So there was that. I knew something was off. And I also was like, no, I was so stuck into the, no, I have to do this because I was told to do this, you know, not remembering, no, you didn't get the mission. You made up the mission yourself. And you know what I mean? And just being in that place where you're just stop, pause, listen. And yeah, there was a lot of emotion around that. And for me, it was mentally draining for me because I had long COVID. And my whole motto was better's better. Every day I was like, what am I going to do to get better today? Right. Yeah. I stuck spaghetti at the wall and I tried everything. And people would say, oh, well, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, I'm not wasting my breath because that's what I lost. So what are you willing to do? I'll share anything you want to know and I'll help you any way I can. But, you know, a lot of people just ask that. They want to stay in victim mode. And they don't want to get better. And all the social media channels for long COVID were draining. Whiners. I mean, I understand they were suffering because I get it. I know how they felt, but like they weren't focused on wellness. They were focused on sickness.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just, so that would be one for me.
And so when you found that you were, I guess, really rooted in, you know, kind of sticking with the mission, at any point, did you stop? Because it was really, it sounds like you received a message that was like, okay, you're done with this. But before that, you know, because some people might question, like, there's so much friction, there's so much challenge, there's so much whatever on this journey. Am I supposed to stick with whatever your mission is? In this particular case, you were told, okay, you're done, went through all of your disappointment, et cetera. And maybe, again, I think I come back to the point that I think you weren't done. I think you had to go through that experience. And I don't really feel like you got it wrong. I think that was exactly the journey that you were supposed to go on. And I think the reason why I bring this up is because what's important here, and I'm saying this really more to the audience, is like, just because you're having challenges, I don't think what Holly is saying is she should have given up. Sometimes we have to go down the road of challenge and heartache and friction and all these things that we don't love and we don't enjoy so that we can come back and actually be exactly where we sometimes got to pick those lessons up to be and fulfill the purpose that we actually need to do. Would you agree? Yeah.
I think of it like a bow and arrow. Sometimes you have to pull back to have it to go.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get that setback and you go backwards before you go forward. And the goal is to keep going forward, but sometimes the setbacks happen and shift happens.
So if you feel like death taught you to live, what do you feel like life is asking of you right now in this moment?
Yeah. Oh, more patience for sure. I just started my 12th company that's related to the retreat stuff, but I got that idea while I was doing the book. So I think it's like being patient, really listening. I mean, I was in such a good space and flow when I was doing that book because I just said, nothing else is going to interfere with this. This is my deadline. I'm not going to miss it. That's new for me. Like, I'm a shiny object, ADHD, all over the place, you know, and people like me, they get told all the time, if you just focus on one thing, you know, and I had a broker. I'm a real estate broker, by the way, 20 years. And my broker years ago, he said to me, you know, if you just focus on real estate, you'd be my number one agent. Huge compliment because he had the number four agent in the whole nation working in his office in this town. So I was like, yeah, I looked him right in the eyes. I says, but I wouldn't wake up happy every day because that's more important to me. And he got dementia really bad. Didn't recognize people. Like 10 years goes by. I run into him. And he, you know what he said to me? He probably didn't remember my name, but he said, are you still doing 100 things? So, I love that. Not that it's good, and not that, you know, we should focus on so many things at once. Multitasking used to be kind of cool. Now it's not cool.
I hear you. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Holly, and sharing so much of your story, your lessons, your experience. Such an intimate experience, and I would love to have you back again.
Thank you.
Thank you, audience, for joining me today, and we will
thank
see you
next
week.
Thank you for listening to the Sacred Leadership Show. Charisse returns Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 Central, 9 Mountain, and 8 Pacific on the InspiredChoicesNetwork.com. Until then, continue taking small steps today to be a leader in your life for the collective.